Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our life to this sport. We give, we do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we have attitude. We're rooting, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
Boxing fans, this is the Rope-A-Dope Radio Podcast. I am your host, Chris Carlson. We are live on a Tuesday night. Hope everybody's doing okay. I know I'm doing pretty good. The basketball tournament for college is about to kick off, so I can't be too mad, that's for sure. Anyway, enough about me. Let's talk about boxing, a variety of items to talk about. Coming off a great weekend with a great fight in a rematch with Estrada and Gonzalez. There was a scorecard that was funky. Go figure. It always seems there's at least one of them that's pretty damn bad. And I'd say 9-3 is not a good look. But we did get a great fight. I'm not calling it necessarily, you know, the fight of the decade. Well, maybe it will be. You never know. But, you know, it was a great fight. It was a great, great fight. They're already talking about a trilogy potential. Rung Vasai clearly will have something to say about that. Who knows? Who knows how that works out? But I would like, you know, I understand Rung Vasai wanting, you know, the fight with Estrada. That makes a lot of sense. They may have to just, you know, strip him or give him step aside money. I don't really know how they're going to work that out, but a lot of people are like, let's get it in, you know, 10 weeks. It's like, dude, are you kidding me? So you just called it the best fight you've ever seen, but then you want them to come back in 10 weeks? Give them a little time. They're both getting a little older. Give them a little time to recoup just because, you know, back in the day they used to fight every couple of weeks. Let's just calm down a little bit. Let's just calm down. You know, here's the kicker. We'll talk about Benavidez and, you know, Showbox and that type of thing as well, including taking a look at some step-up fights for this weekend on DAZN. So definitely something there. Virgil Ortiz Jr. returns against Mauricio Hooker, which is a pretty good step-up fight for him. We'll see how Hooker is at 147. You know, he's a tall dude, so maybe training down to 40 was starting to get to him. And then Akoli, Lawrence Akoli against Glavosky, which I think is a really good step up for him. And, you know, the thing about Saturday, I actually worked at my bar, but got home in time. And I like how DAZN leaves the stream open now. Before, it would be like you couldn't rewind it, or it just be kind of in no man's land and we'd be waiting for the archive. But now it leaves that stream on so long where you get in there and there's nothing on your screen. There's no post fight presser. There's no nothing that makes it look like you know who won. And then you just hit rewind and you can kind of, you know, go that route. So I did, got to see the fight and was so excited after the fight and this, that, and the third. And then I found out about Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and that one definitely stunned me. It's been pretty ugly how we've managed, and I'm talking about boxing Twitter, not me or us, most of us, but boxing Twitter has managed to find a way to not only relate it to COVID and run with these conspiracies, we don't even know really the true cause of death just yet, and also dumping on fighters today. You know, it's pretty crazy because if people know the true story of Hagler, I mean, he had almost 50 fights before he got a title shot. So, you know, definitely the best fight and the best happened more than, no doubt about it. But Hagler is actually a guy that you look at the system and how it still was screwed up, obviously, and how it took him a while once he got on that winning streak and made up some of those losses to get a big shot. So it's kind of crazy. It's like, can't we just respect Hagler and just talk about Hagler? Why do we got to bring in, you know, this other conspiracy stuff? It's sickening after a while. We will talk a variety of stuff. Obviously, Tyson Fury came out and had a couple of choice words late last week, I'd say, maybe earlier this week, but then right behind it, Eddie Hearn came out and said, the fight is done, two-fight deal. They've been saying this since July. It's not that I don't think that they don't have pen to paper, although we thought they already did have pen to paper, but now they really have pen to paper. But hold on, unwind the thing. And it's funny because I've seen it on ESPN talked about. I just saw Jalen and Jacoby, a quick segment on it. And they're like, and Jalen's like, when is it? What's the date? And it's like, dude, this is the problem. Now you're going to make it look like boxing shitting on itself and it can't even make this fight when there is a legit reason why this fight's not done. And it's called, you know, a site fee, which is what they want, especially from the Middle East, which is, you know, rumored to be very high, right? So without that, they're not going to do the fight. They're just not going to. And I don't blame him. But it is funny. Tyson Fury was even saying, hey, you know, I mean, he said a bunch of stuff. It's Fury, right? Talking about that. I'm back to like 11, 12 pints a day. And I'm not really sparring or fighting or any, you know, or training anymore. But he also said, you never know. I could fight Wilder. Don't rule him out. And it is kind of funny how he started barking. And next thing you know, there's a press release saying it's a done deal, but we're about a month out, you know, that type of thing. So we'll talk about a variety of items. Of course, we'll have some current fight news to talk about in the boxing Twitter segment where we call out media members acting like fanboys, or we just read just quality tweets that just hit home. It's like, yep, couldn't have said it better, my friend. So we'll be getting to some of that. It went down in my DM. I did get some DMs from last show, so I'll address those. I'm sure those folks know who they are. Variety of other stuff, like I said, coming off the recap and preview and whatnot. But if this is your first time listening to the Ropadope Radio Podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/Ropadope Radio. It streams live at archives. It's all here. There is, it's boxing heavy, obviously, but there is football and basketball involved, but you don't have to go to Blog Talk and download it directly there or listen to the browser if you don't want to. You can find the Ropadope Radio Podcast on Apple Podcasts, on iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spreaker, almost across the board. We're also part of the Grueling True Sports Podcast Network, which can be found damn near everywhere. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. It's boxing, football, baseball, everything in between, basketball, that's what I was going to say, and a variety of other items. One more thing real quick. Oh, by the way, follow me at the show. I keep forgetting to say this, at Ropadope Radio. That way some folks can DM me sometimes. A couple of people have said I haven't been mentioning it, that therefore I don't know how to get a hold of you. All right, cool. There you go. Follow me on Twitter or whatever you want to tweet, you know, at me there or whatever. Real quick before we get the show going, I got something for you. If you've cut the cord, you're not happy, or you're thinking about it, you're sick of paying $200 a month type stuff for cable, it's called AT&T. Now, I've been doing the AT&T TV now, but that there's been a merger. So if AT&T, the plan start is low as $69.99. They have the cloud DVR available, stream it anywhere on any device, no annual contract, simple pricing, no hidden fees. It's still an internet thing though. And actually, if you do upgrade to the second package, the choice package, that gives you a free year of HBO Max. Plus, for a limited time, you get the rest of the season of NBA League Pass Premium. It's a limited time on that. So heads up on that. That's AT&T TV. Okay. So we got a lot to talk about. And we got John coming back. A lot of folks liking what he has to say, a great boxing mind. We'll be with him in just a second. Thanks for calling in, by the way, John. Coming off a great fight. There's just no way around it. I'm not really sure how everybody, that's part of the title, how did you score it? I think sometimes we can get caught up in one bad scorecard, 117-111 for Estrada, 9-3. I didn't see either guy win 9-3, to be honest with you on that. But I guess I don't know. I just can't see 9 for either. Let's put it that way. It was a competitive fight, no doubt about it. There were some swing rounds. Just off the top of my head, the 7th was a swing round, I remember. And was it the 11th or 10th? Actually, let me check my scorecard really quick. Yeah, I got the 11th as a swing round, too. That's just two rounds I'm talking about. There was some other really close rounds, too. But, you know, when it comes to two swing rounds, I just kind of swing it for both. You know what I mean? I remember the Lomachenko Teofimo, some folks out there heavy into, it was either 8-4. The only acceptable scorecard is 8-4 or 6-6. But everybody said there was two swing rounds, and that always threw me off. I always thought that was biased towards Lomachenko, because if you have two swing rounds, then what the hell are you giving them both to Lomachenko for? If you have two, just swing it then. So to me, a draw wasn't necessarily an acceptable. That didn't fall into the, oh, that's acceptable. But anything else, screw it. You know, to me, it's a little funky that way. But I do think we can get caught up in a score card, much like Golovkin and Canelo the first time. Yes, we know 10-2 is ridiculous, but for Teddy Atlas post-fight getting on ESPN talking about Golovkin 1-10-2 is pretty ridiculous as well. So we gotta be a little more consistent, as do these judges, commissions, promoters, networks, broadcast. I mean, the whole thing. Anyway, did I mention the sanctioning belts? I hope I did. Anyway, I had it 7-5, or the dreaded scorecard, guys, 6-5-1. In favor of Gonzalez. I was cool with the 6-6. I'm cool with the 7-5 for Estrada. I think anywhere in there is pretty good. It was a competitive fight, though. You know, I had them split through the first four rounds. I gave Estrada the first in the third and Gonzalez the second in the fourth. I was a little surprised that Estrada started early with the jabs and hooks and attacked the body, not necessarily coming forward, but being more aggressive than I thought he was, or than I thought he would, I should say. But after six rounds, I had it 3-3. The right hands, like I said, the consistent body work of Estrada started bringing in those uppercuts, but the jab of Gonzalez, which is either a solid jab or a scoring jab or whatever you want to do, you know, he just finds a way to kind of parry his punches into something. Something will start to look like a left hook to the body. It'll go to the head, or a jab will kind of sneak in there as a left hook. So I had it about even. The seventh round, like I said, was a swing round, 10-10. Maybe Estrada landed the harder shots, but Gonzalez kept answering back. Then there was a moment there down the stretch. I gave Gonzalez the 8th. I gave him the 10th. I gave him the 12th. I had a swing round, like I said, in the 11th, so maybe that was, I swung that to Gonzalez. I thought Estrada could have won that fight had he not stayed in front of him for too long of stints, I guess you could say. There was this, it's not that he was leaning on Gonzalez, right? He wasn't that close, but he kind of was like slumped over a minorly. or leaning in, so to speak, and staying right there too long, and that fed right into Gonzalez. I thought that's not to take away, you know, any credit. Like, well, if Estrada wouldn't have done that, it'd have been an easy win, 10-2. That's not what I'm saying, but there was just sometimes where he hung around inside too much. Whereas before, even when he was going forward or kind of at the edge of the pocket or moving, he would get his shots off and at least move or reset or circle or pivot or something like that. But it was a great fight. Copy box numbers, just crazy. 391 and 314. 1317, 30% at 1300 is nuts for Gonzalez. Obviously 12-12 as well. I mean, they threw a bunch of punches. I don't know if it was that much of a disparity, though, in the punch stat. I remember when they showed when they were in the 200s when landing, I think it was like 240 or 230, and it was like 207, and Gonzalez had the lead. I don't remember all of a sudden there being a 50 or 60 punch jump there. That kind of threw me off. But, you know, sometimes the copy box can get a little funky. It is what it is. But I thought Gonzalez closed strong. And obviously 115, 113, one of the cards was 7-5 for him. And then Estrada 115, 113. Like I said, I'm totally cool with that. 6-6 is, like, fine with me, too. Did I mention that? I don't want to throw people off with the 6-5-1 because I know it's sacrilegious, even though my little rant here. We talk all the, you know, all these guys talk about the historical fights and the black and white fights and all that, right? And I'm not talking black against white. I'm talking about literally TV black and white. And, you know, what was in those fights too? Great fights, great matchups, but there was a lot of rabbit punching, right? But then when people do it now, they freak out. And look at the scoring, dude. You have like four tied rounds. Now, I'm not saying I think you should do a tie round every fight, but I'm not afraid to go 10-10. And obviously, as an official judge, you can't do 9-9. You got to have a, you know, the 10-point must system. But I'm not afraid of a 9-9 either. I mean, if you didn't do anything and nobody even landed a big punch to say, hey, he landed three, that person landed four, but hey, or even 8-2, but one of them was a clean-ass punch, that's good enough for me to win the round. But a very good fight. I mean, this was a back-and-forth fight. They both showed their skill. I wouldn't say they both really showed their age too much, but it was fun. It was a blast. So that's my thoughts on it. You know, I thought those hard right hands from Gonzalez, like I said, the left hook, uppercuts, whereas Estrada, it was kind of like Estrada started to kind of get on the move later in the fight. But for me, Gonzalez down the stretch started landing better in the exchanges. And he just kept on that jab, like I mentioned, however it landed. And then a right would follow pretty close. Don't get me wrong. The left hook, right hands, and the uppercuts were working for Estrada too. But it was a close fight. And, hey, I'm a big Estrada fan. You know what I mean? So, and I had that fight very close the first time around, and some people thought, dude, it wasn't a draw, stop. You're just Estrada heavy in this one. And that's cool. I always said that I was a little biased with Estrada. But, yeah, 7-5 either way. I'm going to go ahead and bring in a great boxing mind, John, and see what he thought of the fight and all that good stuff. We got a variety of stuff to talk about, and I can't wait to hear what he has to say about, rest in peace, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, man. I still can't, at age 66, man, that is, you know, my parents are both older than that, and I wouldn't say they were young parents at the time, but that is just way too young to go, especially in the modern day stuff, right? I mean, there was a time where 66 would be old, obviously. Shoot, 42 was old at one point. All right, let's go ahead and bring in John into the fold. What's going on, John? How the hell are you, man?
Hey, Chris. Great to be here. Been excited to get a chance to be with you again this week after all the good action we had last weekend. And, of course, as you just prefaced, sad news about Marvelous Marvin Hagler, but good to get a chance to talk about a great. So like you said, there's really a lot to talk about in boxing tonight. And you really gave a good lead in about some of the events of last weekend, you know, of course, with Estrada and Gonzalez and the death of marvelous Marvin Hagler. But maybe we'll start out with, since you led with it, go back first to the Estrada Gonzalez fight. I thought you made a lot of good points. A lot of the points you made, I agree with. I mean, first of all, you know, I do think it was a, I do think it was a great fight. Maybe just a little bit of, it's part because of the weight class, and then maybe part of the age of these guys for the weight class. Even though power is the last thing to go, look to me like a little bit of the pop might have been gone. I mean, these guys, of course, fighting at 115 pounds, fought with a tremendous gas tank. A lot of punching, which is great, which made for a lot of action and not much clinching. I mean, I agreed with the way you summed up the scoring of the fight, and I think you made a lot of good points that are worth following up on. I thought there was a lot of close rounds in this fight. I thought Estrada did enough to win it, you know, by a couple of rounds. Just like you said, if somebody would have had it a draw or Gonzalez winning closely, I think that would have been perfectly acceptable. I think something you made a good point about is something that I've really been coming back to more in recent years, and some of the judging we get annoyed at, in a way, it's not popular to say because people love to criticize officials and judges in all sports and especially boxing, but you know, like you just stated, I think we need to get back, probably it's not glamorous, but we probably actually need to get back to more even rounds, because of course, this one judge is taking a lot of heat for his 9-3, and this is not just in this fight, but this is in a lot of fights. You know, let's face it, a lot of people, when they're scoring fights, what they really do when it's as competitive as a fight like this Gonzalez-Estrada rematch is, instead of having the even rounds that we probably should be having, what people start doing, because they don't want to be out of whack on their fictional scorecard, the hardcore right. fans, the media, is they start, well, that round was close, I'll give it to Gonzalez, and then that round was close, I'll give it to Estrada, and they start doing that to the whole fight, and then when one judge has a 9-3, they scream. But let's say if you're a professional boxing judge for a moment, when you're theoretically not even supposed to be looking at how you scored the previous rounds, you could, in theory, in a very, very extremely close competitive fight, give six straight rounds to Gonzalez or six straight rounds to Estrada and say, boy, that came down to a couple of punches, but, you know, I just thought that guy kept winning. Now,
sure.
And then when the fight was that close, we say, my Lord, my God, how could the guy have it 8-4 or 9-3? Ban him. And that's one of the reasons why this keeps happening. I'm not saying there's not bad judges out there where they just straight out do a bad job. And I think some of the savvier people who want to make the argument for Gonzalez kind of know that. So they say, well, how did this guy give Estrada the 12th? Well, you know, maybe that's a good point. But if the guy got one round wrong, you know, straight out wrong out of the whole fight that was that close the whole way, it may not be as outrageous as you think. Now, I'm not saying boxing hasn't had corruption, doesn't have corruption. You know, certainly we know in boxing a lot of that comes from the alphabet organizations. But, you know, you go back even to the 70s and you had Don King pay off the ring for ratings. So it could even get to that level. You know, Bob Arum testified in the court about bribing the alphabets. So we know some of it goes on. But when people immediately jump to conspiracy, especially – you know, we all have biases, like you said, Chris. I mean, all of us. You do, I do. We all have a little bit of biases. You have to try to check them. And, you know, you had the whole crowd who said Chocolatito has been their favorite fighter in recent years, and they hope he goes on for one more run. They all screamed robbery. How could anybody score it for Estrada? Well, you know, what do you think they were going to say, especially if they had money on the fight, which, you know,
right.
we know is obviously gambling's becoming legal in more states by the
right.
day. It's coming up in New York.
And you got to be correct on boxing Twitter. You know, you got to be correct in your predictions. So, you know, at all odds, some people would just make it be that way, you know.
And can't argue with that either. Biases are going to come in there. Nobody likes to be wrong. I don't like being wrong. You don't like being wrong. I don't know anybody that likes it. You got to admit to it sometimes, but I don't know anybody that likes it. But I think another thing you have to look at, too, that people aren't looking at, and I've been saying this only half joking, because you know boxing Twitter, and then and before that you know it would be in other forms of media, but now it's boxing Twitter. A lot of times everybody says, well, quote unquote, supposedly too, you know, everybody had it for so and so in this fight, you know, quote unquote, everybody had it for Golovkin in the first Canelo fight, everybody quote unquote had it for Chalka with Tito this time. Now that's not even true, but I'm just saying that's what they say. And then you know, that they will then go on a narrative literally for years that you know, that guy won the fight. That can't be questioned, which isn't true. Now this is what I say half joking. I'll say, well, should we go to American Idol judging of fights where everybody just texts in, you know, Estrada Gonzalez 2-1 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, you want to
Saturday,
see some bad cards. You're about to see some bad cards doing that, yeah.
Yeah, they just text in. Now, I want to use a little bit of logic here. Why would that be? Why would that literally be a bad idea? Because, well, one of the things would be, even if boxing judges aren't perfect and sometimes there's corruption, in a lot of ways what we're not looking at is, you know, we have to have a judge who at least supposedly subscribes to some code of ethics and supposedly is independent, because otherwise, it would be American Idol scoring. In other words, doesn't matter what your biases are. You could have fallen asleep during the seventh, but you still get to send your text in about who won the fight.
Yep.
You could be drunk.
It's
in other words, there's no standard.
All-star game voting and stuff like that.
Right, all-star game voting. So obviously, that's not a good idea. So that's where I was tweeting a couple of weeks ago, and some people didn't know what I meant, but I was serious, even though it's not perfect. That's why we need boxing judges. In other words, you have to get back to the basic concept of we have to try to have three supposedly independent people who at least sworn their duty to be independent, even if it's not perfect and even if they have some biases, because look at what our alternative is. You know, you would have no standards. So, you know, I mean, I think people need to get back to little basics like that. And then you see the crazy conspiracy theories. I mean, we're in sports. It's starting to almost remind you of politics, which I won't get into the politics. People don't have to pick a side or anything. But, you know, one thing, Chris, I know that you've looked at, I've seen you tweet about it. I agree 100%. And I'm not going to talk about any side on politics. I don't need to. But a lot of the people on boxing Twitter will say, of course, I'm unbiased and I'm not a fanboy. I don't think we should have all this tribal picking a side. And then that person has been on one side for the last 5 years and has never had a tweet on the other side. So in other words, they always puff themselves out. Well, you know,
yeah.
I don't think we should have these sides. I'm not biased, but they've never had a tweet on the other side of things for 5 years.
But here's the reason why this fight didn't get made. And it's a pattern type shit. And you're like, well, wait a second.
Right.
And you know, how many times, John, do you have to remind us that you call it down the middle? Just do it.
Exactly. Right. I don't want to, you know, it's just like, you know, you've seen it, I've seen it, we've all seen it. I think it's the comparison to the guy you went to high school with who he puts up on your Facebook that, just like you said, of course, I always call it down the middle. I'm an independent. I don't have a political side. But he's always popped up on your timeline on your Facebook on one side for the last 5 years.
Right.
You know, it's like, dude, just you say what you got to say. Don't tell me that how you're supposed to be unbiased. So there's a lot of biases that all people had out there. I just think this was getting back to the fight, competitive close fight. I think they both threw a lot of punches. You need to be able to do that in the lighter weights. Even though I thought Estrada just did enough to win the fight, I think he was stinging Gonzalez some, and I think it was around the sixth. He really tried to pick it up and put some hurt on him, and he was on the verge of doing it, I thought, but then it looked like he gassed out a little bit. I mean, I thought in the end he still won the fight, very close, but it could have gone either way, could have been a draw. But I think he did seem to lose a little bit of his confidence. Then he picked it back up, but I don't remember the exact round. My recollection, going off the top of my head, it was around the sixth. That, you know, I thought he had a lot more punch variety than Chocolatito in that fight. But what Chocolatito's done well in his, you just have to call it his comeback, because it did look like he was done when Star Rungvisai knocked him cold and was beating him to the punch. You know, he's tough and he's determined, even at the advanced age for the weight of 33. But, you know, he just kind of really has to get aggressive down, and he just kind of, like, he was landing the right hands consistently, but that's what he's been doing a lot of these fights since he's been making that comeback. He just kind of got to force that right hand in, you know. I don't think he has the, like, you saw Estrada with a lot more punch variety now. I mean, like, I think that was a glaring difference in this fight, even though I think the fight could have gone either way, because I think what was surprising, like I said, Gonzalez, at the more advanced age and having been knocked out, he had a little bit better of a gas tank. I think he just had a little bit better of a gas tank. I don't think it was enough for him to win the fight, in my opinion, even though I wouldn't argue with anybody that gave it to him. I wouldn't argue with anybody that had it a draw. But I think that kept him in it, and he really had to just kind of keep banging home and forcing that right hand, putting pressure on it. He did that with more variety and more of his prime. Now I think it's more, you know, he just kind of keeps banging home that right hand. And, you know, it was a very entertaining fight. But I think what you said as well, and, you know, the hipsters don't want to hear it, but for my own opinion, you know, we're here in March. Do I think in December, in my feeling, outside of hipsterdom, this will be the fight of the year? Probably not. But, you know, I don't think, you know, it's not that it's required, but, you know, nobody went down. Nobody was in serious trouble. You had a lot of action. You had a lot of suspense because the fight was very close, but you didn't have that real dramatic back and forth where this guy's about to go.
Who got hurt?
And that's right. And that's, but let's face it, again, this is not being hipsterdom, but I think this is stating reality. I mean, the lower weight classes, especially when you get that low, have just never really been popular in the U.S. And that was always one of the reasons why. I mean, like it or not, hipsters, you don't want to hear it, but there's a reality to that. And you know, you could see that, remember, with the TV ratings, when they showed their initial Superflies on HBO, it was high. They went down to a Superfly 3 that I believe Estrada was the headliner. And HBO, which has got 40 million subscribers, these were pre-pandemic numbers when there were more people watching TV. You know, they were down at like 296 on the last card. Now, you know, DAZN, last credible report pre-pandemic, and they did not handle the initial part of the pandemic well. I think they bounced back. I like the one-year value. Mm-hmm. With that said, last credible report was pre-pandemic, they had about 850,000 U.S. subscribers. So, you know, we're 1 year into a pandemic where all sports viewing has been down on all platforms. And, you know, the rule of thumb, if you know anything about TV, you don't 100% of the subscribers don't watch an event. It just doesn't work that way.
Right.
So, you know, how many people saw it? You know, DAZN's not in the, and I'm talking about the U.S. I'm not going worldwide, but
yeah.
You know, how many people thought, you know, if you're really going to be honest about what the numbers would be, it's not going to be very high. Why I just say that is, it doesn't mean it wasn't a great fight. It doesn't mean I don't like both of these fighters, and I do, and they gave a great effort, and I'll certainly watch it again. I feel my DAZN value has been good for a year, but with all that said, again, when you see people, I've seen tweets then also, like people who say we shouldn't look at ratings, saying this fight, Gonzalez Estrada 2, is good for growing the sport. Well, you're going to have to explain
right.
to me with the numbers how the sport's going to grow with Gonzalez Estrada 2, weight classes that don't draw in the U.S. on an app that by no accounts at this point would have a million subscribers.
And that 800,000, just to hover around there real quick, John, sorry for cutting you off, that 800,000 was peak. That 800,000
right, was
peak. So that means
peak.
A month later, 2 months later, so it starts to fall off, and they didn't have content like ESPN and Fox and Showtime. Showtime actually numbers, not boxing, but Showtime subs went way up. during the pandemic because that's what people started doing at home, started watching shit, especially streaming stuff. So they didn't have content. So it is kind of funny. The last two Canelo fights, they haven't released anything, and I don't blame them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just pure numbers. It's not being negative. It's just some people, they either don't know. I think some people really don't know. I mean, TV is something you kind of got to study the numbers and things like that. And then some people who do know, then they just don't want to acknowledge the realities of it because you just really got to do the math. I mean, because DAZN was a little slow when the pandemic started. They did not offer any deal for re-upping, and I was in that group. All the people who had signed on for Canelo Jacobs when the pandemic started, they got a boost there. But those 1 years were about to run, and they offered no deal. Now, when fights started coming back, to their credit, they kept the 1 year deal out there, which I do think is a good value for people that like fights.
It's awesome.
Right. It's been good. You know, some of the stuff we would have been able to stream for free, let's face it. But you get better quality action. It's easier to just know where it is. And you know, it comes out to $8.33 a month. That's worked out good. I'm not complaining about that. I've been happy with that. But again, everybody had to re-up. I'm sure all the Jacobs Canelo subscribers, when you had that lull, when nobody knew what was going to happen, I'm sure some of them did not come back. So right, you like you said, you were peaked out when the pandemic started at about 850. There had to be a drop since then because even network TV sports watching's off. It's kind of something that wasn't expected with the pandemic, but it can't be disputed. I mean, there's been some good articles about that lately. All ratings are down in all sports since the pandemic started. So boxing's not going to be immune from that, obviously. So I think. You know, even though this was entertaining for boxing fans, I think you made a real good point last week. And, you know, why did HBO first start getting into this Superfly stuff and adding Roman Gonzalez? I mean, it was pretty savvy. It was because you don't have to pay these guys as much, and you could make some fights. But, you know, even as their money goes up some, it's going to be harder. But still, it's not the kind of money that they'd have to pay people in other divisions to get in tough. And that's, you know, what is good about this, you know, super fly thing and guys in these lighter weight classes is when they can put together some good fights. I'm all for that too, but there's just reasons historically why people don't watch those classes as much. And I don't think that's going to change. Remember, the UFC does not have a male weight. I mean, they didn't even bother with it. So you don't have to do it.
I mean,
it
took them a while just to add the light ones they had, remember? Because it was Strike
right.
Force kind of had such a packed division that they kind of forced it.
Yeah, and they had that WEC thing, which they experimented with, which was only the lighter classes, and they folded it into UFC. They folded the which the WEC was an MMA attempt to just spotlight lower weight classes. That was 155 and under for MMA going lower, and they folded that. You know, UFC had owned that, and they just shut that down. So, you know, I mean, these are just facts. Again, you cannot like them. Boxing hipsters can get mad and say, of course you can. Chris and I are watching it. We're enjoying it. We're going to be watching with you. But when you talk about growth of the sport, popularity, things
right.
like that. In that sense, this just isn't it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And like I said, it's proven because either it is the love of Chocolatito and all this stuff we're talking about in the hipster thing, but also if it took 8 years to have the rematch, who was, you know, like looking at Estrada going, hey, is this guy going to get a rematch at some time? I mean, he's proven, he keeps following him up in weight, and we didn't get that at all, like not barely anything at all. And I'm not saying I want to complain all the time either about shit. And the fact is they were fighting pretty damn good competition over a year's time, so it made up for it. It helped you forget it, no doubt about it. But it is kind of funny how that worked, literally eight years and not a peep, really.
Yeah, exactly, and that's one example. Another example is Inoue started at 108, and there's a lot of people that love Inoue, and he's now 118, 3 pounds north. And I'm not saying, especially after what we saw Saturday night, I'm not saying he doesn't have too much power for him, et cetera. But he started at 108. I mean, he hasn't been sitting there at 118 pounds all these years. Those guys are only 3 pounds south. Bantamweight, 118 pounds, does not have many legitimate challengers. And nobody's saying, well, you know, now it's time for one of these guys to step up, or, you know, enough of these guys fighting each
right.
other, one of them to fight Ioka. You know, we don't hear any of that surrounding mm-hmm. these guys.
And sometimes all these complaints are completely warranted, and sometimes it's just like, dude, these are good fights. Why are you complaining, you know?
Right, and I can see that. And that's why I'm not overly worried about it in terms of these are good fights. I mean, even though I understand, I mean, you know, we're watching boxing all the time. We know how to evaluate. It doesn't mean we're right all the time. I know, especially after what we saw Saturday night, how – people would now even more than ever say, well, you know, Inoue is going to kill Estrada now, you know, even though it's only 3 pounds apart. And then they get into it's too big of a weight. And I mean, let's face it, it's not just a too big of a weight. It has to do with talent. I mean, you know, even though
yeah.
these guys are good, if Inoue is that good, I mean, you know, he might just be that much better than these guys. I mean, he was at 108 pounds. You know, these guys were always around the same weight. You know, we don't, you know, as we don't have to go into it all, but we've gone into it before, but, you know, you don't need all these alphabet created weight classes in the lower weights or even going higher. So, you know, it's not that these guys couldn't in theory be opponents, for each other, even though Inoue would be a big favorite. So, you know, you've got that there too, but like you said, I mean, heck, I'm not going to complain either. I want good fights. I mean, I'm not against either of these two guys, you know, fighting each other again or fighting Sorung Vsai again. I'll watch it, and I think it'll be entertaining. It's just keep it in a little bit of perspective. That's all.
That's it. Just keep it in a little perspective. Let's not go too over the top. Like, that was one of the fight of the ages. Like, oh my God, that was something you'll never see again. It was a great fight, man. No doubt about it. But, yeah, I can't call that, like, one of the better fights I've seen because nobody really got hurt, you know. Nobody
right.
got knocked down, like you said. So I don't think it'll win fight of the year. But the cool thing is to go that long and it still live up to it, that was pretty cool. Because that's something
that
you
was.
Don't necessarily see, you know what I mean? I was a little worried about that, I got to admit.
Right. It was not a disappointment. And they are both older. And sometimes it's, you know, for that weight class, it's hard for guys of that age to bring it. I got to give them credit for a lot of heart, a lot of determination. Obviously, they threw a tremendous amount of punches. So it was action the whole time. And it was suspenseful in the sense that it was very competitive. It was very close. I mean, that had me very focused because of the competitiveness of the fight and how close. It wasn't one of those back and forth dramatic fights where you know each guy's in trouble, that type of a thing, or each guy's been down, or one guy's been down, that type of a thing. So it wasn't quite that. We'll see what the rest of the year brings us. I mean, but I think it's worth keeping that in mind before people get carried away with the narrative and say it's a fight of the year lock.
Right. Yeah. Especially the lock thing. We're gonna kind of jump all around here. We talked last week about Benavidez's weight and should he be at 175, given the fact he's so tall and he came down from such a high weight and all that good stuff. Now, this time, his body looked a little different, and he even admitted that he didn't put on as much water weight the next day. He came basically to the same venue where he missed weight. He came pretty much close to on weight the way he describes it, and I believe it when you see him at the scale. And also on fight night, it didn't look like he had the little extras, you know, around the waist. He did look thinner. He even said he was quicker. But I think he's trying to maybe get right in between where maybe not that light, but you don't want to put 17 pounds of water weight in what else weight on the next day. What did you think overall how he looked? Because, like I said, his body looked a little different. He did look quicker. I don't know what that's going to mean for his power. And then first half looked pretty good. Second half, it looked like he really was much sharper.
Yeah, I mean, he's been going like that when he makes the weight under 168. I mean, I've been a big believer in David Benavidez, still am. I give him credit discipline-wise. I'll be the first to say I had serious doubts if he was going to even make 168 again, and he weighed in at 167 too. So for what he wants to do, I give him credit. But and I think what he's not getting enough credit for in this fight, I don't mean to overrate it, but you have to go on what you see, and especially for boxing in 2021, Ellis came with a determined underdog effort. The guy came to fight. You know, he didn't come to lay down. He came to fight. So Benavidez was in somewhat tougher than you would have expected in that sense. He's got the hand speed, combination punching, especially when he starts with that left to the body, which he loves to do, and he's very good at. And that's probably his best punch, even when you really watch him a lot. But I still just get that sense of a bit of weakness going down that low. He was 250 pounds as a kid. We talked about that before last week. And I think weight can be overrated for a lot of guys, but I still think for him, I've seen him in his career coming up, of course, against lesser opposition, but still, when he weighs in the 170s, he looks a lot stronger. He looks a lot more powerful. Looks like there's a lot more on his shots. I just see Ellis standing there like he did, lasting as long as he did. You know, if Benavidez is throwing those shots, you know, at 175 pounds, that's my hunch with him. We'll see, when he's at a light heavyweight, we'll see more power. Guys get moved more by his shots. He's great at throwing the combinations. Still gets guys out of there, but I think, you know, we'll see him dropping more guys. Again, unless he just stays. I think unless he stays at this weight too long, I don't know exactly when that'll be. He's 24 now, but I just don't think I know about the money and Canelo's in the division, but it just doesn't look like that's going to come off with the politics. Canelo's talking about staying with Eddie Hearn, and, you know, that's the zone tie up. And I just don't see him making a deal with Benavidez. So he may just want to make that. I mean, he's still got Plant there, but if they wanted to put those two together, I mean, they could have done it, and they still can do it. So time's running out there, PBC. I mean, you could do it at light heavyweight later on, but, I mean, I know Plant's hoping for Canelo in the fall, but, again, I don't know. I just don't know if you know, that is a bad thing in boxing, but American TV rules whether a lot of these fights are going to be made, and site fees, like you mentioned. Two big things we don't like, but have a lot to do with whether the fights are going to get made. And if Canelo just stays on DAZN with Hearn, I mean, that's his option. And, you know, Hearn does a good job with his show. You know, I have noticed that lately. I think Canelo probably likes that. But, you know, again, I don't know about the overall exposure and things like that. So I just don't know. But getting back to Benavidez, I just think his future's at 175 pounds. And I think he's one guy that'll be a little stronger. And I still see a little bit of that missing, even with him making weight as comfortably as he did for this one.
And we are going to get to the legend, Marvin Hagler, in just a moment. Isaac Cruz or Isaac Cruz, however we want to look at that. You know, that type of fight, I think, is going to do something for him as a fighter. I don't know exactly what it's going to do, but the style, both on the guy on the move so much, the guy has a pretty good jab. The guy can clinch the hell out of you. I thought at points in the fight, I thought it was actually good by Cruz to get Ruff back. He got a point deducted. Obviously, there should have been a point deducted, on Romero for holding and whatnot. But I think in the long run, you know, it kind of feels like, did we see the potential ceiling coming with Cruz? Or is this something he's going to learn from? Because the style, I mean, talk about getting on a 10 speed downhill at times, but then he would stop and flurry off the ropes, but then hold as well. So I just think it was kind of a learning experience. Well, what'd you think of it? I mean, I guess it could be a little of all three as well. Like, hey, maybe he's just going to be a limited power guy that's going to come rush you. What would you think of the performance in the fight itself? Because it was a little funky in spots where you're just like, dude, it's just nothing but hold.
I agree with you, Chris. Normally, I feel like the he learns something when somebody doesn't look that good is overrated, but I kind of got that feel from this one as well. You know, Cruz is only 22. You know, yeah, I was hoping he'd look spectacular. I thought he might. But, you know, the Romero guy, you got to be a little bit fair to him in the sense he was in on very short notice and he doesn't have pop. But giving him those two things, he wasn't real anxious to fight. You know, a lot of grabbing, like you said. I mean, just too much holding. And, you know, he was moving his hands, but he wasn't trying to do any damage whatsoever, and just grabbing and run, kind of almost running. So tough for Cruz to look good against that. I did like the way he just adjusted and was able to just get himself in a position where in an ugly fight like that, he won rounds. So it was an ugly fight. But I a lot of guys with the power he's gotten, he's only 5'4". And he is explosive. He's only 22 years old. This is going to be a guy like his prime because, you know, he's going to be all explosiveness and you know, kind of like physical force. And those guys peak early. They're spectacular, but then it doesn't last long. I think he's one of those guys. So I think it was good that he learned that here because he's going to have guys trying to fight him like that. And he's going to have to learn how to, you know, the ring off on him. You know, get his shots home anyway, put pressure on him and break him down and wear him out. And this was a good guy to kind of learn that against because this is not the only time he's going to see that, obviously. He's going to see that in the future, you know, unless he's matched up just with another slugger, which will be explosive. But I think, you know, he'll be more explosive in better style matchups. But there's going to be quite a few other guys who are going to try to fight him that way. So, yeah, I agree with you on this one. This was probably something he needed to learn to deal with.
I like the one hand free to the body when he was being held. It's like, all right, dude, then I'm just going to hit you five times in the body. Some of it would be on the hip. Some of it would be on the kidney. I don't care. All you're doing is holding me. I mean, he could have got his arms hyperextended a couple times in that fight.
Yeah,
that's how hard the holding was, you know?
The holding was bad in that fight. And the guy kept going down to the canvas. You know, it was one of those kind of things. The guy was... A lot of things the guy was doing, Romero was stinking it out. I mean, you know, he was going down to the canvas and just all that kind of stuff, all the grabbing. So it was an ugly situation for Cruz. He came out with a W, and I think he probably learned something. I probably did learn some things in this one.
Yeah, I think so. Any other items that you want to touch upon? Obviously, go ahead. Yeah, just go whatever you want to do as far as recap.
Sorry, Chris. The only reason I jumped in was while we were on the subject, I thought it was only fair because it was my shocker of the week that coming and the way it played out. I don't think anybody else did either. I think I can say that fairly. Terrell Gaucher with a second-round knockout of Jermonte Clark. Gaucher, a non-puncher who's not aggressive, comes out, you know, throwing straight right hands with power and scores a spectacular knockout in the second round. Nobody saw that coming. And he's 33 years old. He's got amateur pedigree. He's never fought like that before. But in a division where PBC's got a lot of top talent, he probably got himself another big fight. Not that this wasn't a big fight. This was a big fight, but he's been in there with Lara. You know, he's fought Trouty.
Mm-hmm.
He probably got himself another big or semi-big fight with that performance. And I liked what he said after the fight. I don't know if he can keep it going. You know, we've heard boxers, maybe with good intentions, but so many times say they're going to fix that, this and that, and they just end up being who they are. But since he just had that performance, and he did say post-fight that, look, you know, I've looked at things, you know, my camp said, I've got to throw more punches. You know, I've just got to be more aggressive. I've got to throw more punches. Did not fight well against Lubin, but hurt him at the end with the same punch. So if I'm not saying he will, chances are he won't. But if he ever does get another good fight and throws punches, since he was a U.S. Olympian, he's got some pedigree, maybe he could make himself a more viable fighter and build on this. But if not, he did it for one night, and it was a shocker.
Yeah, I agree. It definitely was a shocker. I didn't expect that to happen that early, especially. And by the way, basically the Brandon Lee talk that you talked about last week, the way you described him, pretty much played out to a T.
Yeah, I mean, Lee, you know, I'm glad he got on people's radar screen after that fight because, you know, the U.S. has a lot of up-and-coming talent. I mean, they really do, and Brandon Lee's right there, and I think people get that now. They weren't getting that before that fight, but I was starting to get it when I just look at his strength and power. I mean, I think he ends up as a welterweight at 147, even though he's at 140 now. He's 21. I don't think he's 22. I think he's 21 years old. I mean, guy's a formidable force. And you know, there's a lot of other, look at all the other American guys. You know, we talk about the lightweights, you know, Teofimo Lopez, you know, Gervonta Davis, Ryan Garcia, Devin Haney. Then you go up to welterweight, you got Brandon Lee, Jerron Ennis. I mean, you know, the list goes. Virgil Ortiz is fighting Saturday night. I mean, these are all American guys. I mean, this is a high level, a very, very high level of talent.
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. It is. We are going to have that segment here sometime in the future, highlighting that. You know, obviously, right after the fight, I hadn't heard about Marvin at all because I kind of got home. I stayed off social media because, like I said, I had to close the bar. And I came home, didn't want to see anything, just wanted to watch the fight so I wouldn't be spoiled or any text message or anything. Got through it, and next thing you know, I saw the news, age 66, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, you know, obviously passes away. This one got to me just because it was so sudden at the age and whatnot. And you know, I saw a lot of great tweets. I don't want to focus too much on all the stuff around the death that's out there, rumors at this point completely. But just talk a little bit about, you know, what Marvin Hagler meant to boxing, what it meant to you on a personal level. I know my grandfather, that was one of his favorite, if not his favorite fighters from the 70s and 80s in general. And he got me deep into the sport. Obviously in the 80s, as a kid, it was a bigger sport at the time. But when we watched that Hagler Leonard, he was on the opposite side of the room than I. I mean, we were not, because Sugar Ray Leonard was my guy, Hagler was his guy, and we were not going to talk for those rounds. Once it's over, we can talk and all that and that type of thing. But so that one got to me a lot. And he just grinded his way, you know, to the tops of the sport in the way, you know, when it comes down to how he started, when it comes down to what he was getting paid per fight, even on the pro debut of Sugar Ray Leonard, how he fought on that undercard, how it just took him a while to get there, and then he had to kind of make up some fights that were draws or losses, and then the career just took off. But it took quite a while. I'd love to hear what you have to say about the legendary Marvelous Marvin Hagler.
Well, like you said, Chris, it was a tough one to take. I saw it, you know, a few hours before, you know, Estrada Chocolatito too, and you know, it kind of put a bit of a damper on things, even though it was a boxing night. Because Hagler was, he was a legend. He really was like a fighter's fighter. I mean, he was like the definition of a fighter. You know, I had tweeted out after it happened, I'd been doing this for decades. you know, I had so much respect for him as a fighter, I had started to use what I called the Hagler test when evaluating other fighters. In other words, if I saw a fighter start complaining too much about low blows, you know, I'd say to myself, well, would Marvin Hagler do that? Of course not. You know, a guy, you know, kind of folding after he got hurt. And I thought, you know, would Hagler do that? No. Or, you know, a guy coming in not in shape. And I thought, would Hagler do that? No, Hagler wouldn't do that. But of course, there was only one Marvelous Marvin Hagler. So of course you couldn't have ordinary fighters, as tough of a business as it is, living up to the standards of Marvin Hagler. But it's like he was to me the standard of a fighter. You know, only officially knocked down once in his career against Roldan, and, you know, saw that fight live as it happened. You know, you had to kind of call it a knockdown the way it was, but the punch didn't hurt Hagler or anything. It was like behind the head. You know, if you wanted to argue that he never truly was down in his career, if he had, even though he had the one official knockdown, you could argue that. He's very close. You know, the only fight people really, most people seem to agree that he lost was his first fight with Willie Monroe. And there was even some reports at the time about that fight being close or maybe on the drawish level. I'm not saying that was the majority, but there were some. And all others, there was people that thought Hagler won the fight. I mean, not, you know, outliers. I mean, right through the Leonard fight, his last fight, which I did think he won. You know, as years have gone by, maybe it wasn't quite the robber. Like we were saying earlier, you get emotional and things. And even I look back, maybe that wasn't quite the robbery I thought it was. There were people I respect who thought, you know, Leonard could have gotten the decision. But, you know, there was certainly argument he won. So, you know, for a guy to never truly be knocked down in his career, only one official knockdown with the guys he fought, and then for a guy to also be on the verge of arguably never really lost a fight in his career. I mean, he's on the edge, maybe the first Monroe fight, and making an argument for one all others. It really is just amazing and shows you how great he was. And he had some of the great lines that they were bringing back. Like he said, you know, it's hard to get up and run at 5 a.m. when you're wearing silk pajamas. And, you know, the guy was always disciplined. You know, he always had the discipline. You know, he came in with that war moniker for the Hearns fight. And I never, you know, probably another one of the biggest tributes I can give to him is I never thought, I mean, I can go back to the time, and I was a huge Tommy Hearns fan. And, you know, I really thought Hearns was going to win that fight. I thought Hagler, as great of a chin as he had and how tough he was, that he could not get through Hearns' power at that point in Hearns' career. And look, he almost didn't. He got buckled and he got cut badly early on. But the guy just kept coming in, and to walk through a guy that punched like Thomas Hearns, who knocked out light heavyweights. It was just amazing, you know, for Hagler to just win the fight that way. I don't think anybody saw that coming before the fight, even though he was talking about war. And it was just unbelievable. And I remember my dad and my brother were at the closed circuit location for that one, and just talking about everybody in the closed circuit in Jersey. You know, back then, you know, you had these closed circuit venues that were packed.
Yep.
You know, there'd be like, yep, there'd be 15,000 people at the closed circuit.
Yeah, literally. That'd be the pay-per-view, basically, you know. A bunch of those Ali fights that were overseas, a lot of that was that. People don't realize it.
Exactly. And just, you know, but everybody being on their feet during that first round, on their feet in the closed circuit, in the closed circuit location. I wasn't with them at that particular location at that time because I was away at college at the time. And my brother and dad were still home. But I just remember them talking about that, you know, everybody going crazy on their feet during the first round at the closed circuit location. So, you know, that was the kind of, you know, and Hagler, I think also what I think is, I think means a lot too, like you said about the tough way up and, you know, he had the guys fought more than and everything, taking so long in terms of fights to get that shot. And there, and back the way things were the way they should be. Only middleweight was the last division that basically went through to the old days. You know, there was a little bit of a blip in there, but basically where you just had that lineage where it was, there is only one middleweight champion, and even the alphabets, that was the last division that they really didn't tamper with as much. And Hagler, you know, waited for that shot, and then he got that shot finally against Antifermo, and he had the controversial draw, but, you know, got back at it. And then, you know, Alan Minter, a guy who was an Olympic medalist and a very good fighter, had to go and fight him over in London, his second shot. And I thought he took his foot off the gas pedal a little bit in his first shot against Antifermo, even though a lot of people thought he won that fight. And he just wasn't going to let that happen again against Minter. I mean, Minter was hanging in there tough, trying to give it back. And he just sliced and battered Minter up, you know, early on with just a ferocious performance in enemy territory, where he ended up
getting they weren't singing Sweet Caroline, let's just put it that way.
No, he was getting pelted with bottles, not getting serenaded by Sweet Caroline. And, you know, the job done. But that's what I love, because we don't have to single anybody out particularly, but I think it does matter. In other words, he had a controversial draw, and what did he come back and do? He came back and he said, there's not going to be any draw this time. I'm taking care of business. I'm knocking this guy out. Nobody's getting in my way. I'm going to war, and I'm knocking this guy out. Didn't have to be any screaming about judges or anything. The second title shot, and then it was 7 years before anybody got that title away from him, and in the most controversial way in the Leonard fight. So, you know, that's what the guy was all about.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I know he spoke of regretting those first 4 to 5 rounds with Leonard, how he fought. You know, that did kind of throw me off when I'm watching that fight live, trying to kind of sit in the middle of the ring with Leonard, kind of going into his style, which kind of gave him the lead. But
yeah,
it's a great
fight.
And
he fought right-handed. He fought right-handed. I mean, that was
– that's right.
To say it, because Hagler was so great. But you know what that was? That really was. It just shows it can happen to anybody. I think what Teddy Atlas called him. Teddy Atlas had that great tribute. It's still out there on YouTube that he had on ESPN, and anybody really should watch it, because he sums him up. But like Teddy Atlas called him, the indestructible man, and I agree. But he's still a human being, and he was past his prime. But in those first 5 rounds or so, when he was fighting Righty, and he was letting Leonard get some rounds, the moment, even though he'd been in the big fights with Hearns and Duran, that Leonard fight in 87, you know, you remember, Chris, as you described it well, watching with your grandfather, that, I mean, that was on Super Bowl level in the U.S. And, you know, outside of Mayweather, Pacquiao was that type of a thing, even though that was past, you know, the ultimate time to have it. You know, Leonard Hagler was too, really. It was. Actually is no doubt about that. So, you
there
know,
was
Hagler
a lot of doubt about Leonard going into that camp or going into that fight, you know.
Right, and Leonard had been retired. He'd been off. That was an amazing comeback by Leonard. Can't dispute that. There's just no disputing that. That showed Leonard's greatness. But Hagler, the moment got to him a little bit. I mean, because there was no reason to fight right-handed. You were fighting a Sugar Ray Leonard who'd been off literally for years and was having his first fight at the full middleweight limit. I mean, you want, even though he's a different fighter than Hearns, you would have wanted to jump on him just like you got on Hearns. I mean, the guy'd been off. He hadn't been fighting. So the last thing you want to do is not fight southpaw and, you know, fight right-handed, which is not the way you fight, and then lay back on him for the early rounds and let him get into a rhythm. So it was a horrible strategic mistake, but I love the stories, and it's true. You know, he was loyal to the Petronellis right to the end. That was his last fight. Never criticized him, stayed with him the whole way. And it does show the character of the man and what kind of a guy he was. And I think one interesting report, I can throw this out there because this is good info. And I wanted to tweet about it before I got on because I remember it, but it's hard to, you know, you'd have to do like Alexa search to find it.
Sure.
The New York Post had reported right before the Leonard fight that Hagler was actually 5 years older than he was saying, and you know, he was born in Newark and they had his birth certificate up there. That story's never been talked about much since, and of course Hagler never said it was true or anything. So Wally Matthews, who's still on Twitter, he wrote for the Post at the time, and I tweeted out right before I got on, Wally, do you remember that? He said he did, but even though he wrote for the Post for a long time, he said he didn't believe it, which is interesting, but that story was published. So I'm not saying whether it's right or wrong, but
sure.
If you look at Hagler's amateur career, and people, and some of them are younger, I'm not faulting them. It's hard to get into boxing history that deep, and Hagler was our era, you know, we lived through it. But if you look at when Hagler was hitting his AAU medals, okay, you know, he was not a gold medalist or anything, but he did have an amateur career. He would have been, if he's the age he claimed he was, he would have been like 16, and he was a middleweight.
Oh,
okay?
Wow,
so,
yeah. Wow, that puts
right,
it in
so,
perspective now.
Exactly. So, like, you know, it's not theoretically, physically impossible, but for him to be a middleweight from the time he was 16 years old to 32, you know, that's really –
And
that's
ripped
really
to the gills, too, like – in shape as much as you can be.
Ripped to the gills. And I just wanted to say that there was a story, and Wally did confirm that. You don't have to believe the story, but I didn't want anybody to accuse me because you got to do Alexa search.
Sure.
And I haven't got to pay to do Alexa search. So that article's like you can't Google it. It just doesn't pop up.
Right.
I think something like that pops up, but not that Post article. But I want to say Wally did acknowledge the story ran. He wrote for the Post at the time. And if that story was true, I'm not saying whether it is or isn't, if it was, he would have been 71 now. And he would have been 37 when he fought Leonard. Now, again.
Yeah, and when you look at him and it starts to add up. Huh.
They did have the birth certificate in the story. Now, Wally, I got to say, Wally tweeted back, yes, John, that story ran. I remember it. Though in the Post, I don't think it was true. So, you know, take it for what you will, but it is one of the big three New York papers, and it ran. So it was shortly before the fight, and I remember reading it. Someday maybe somebody will get that pulled up and do the search. Obviously, it exists, but you'll have to do a paid search on that one. So I always wondered about that, though, because others then did say when you look at when he was AAU meddling, it would be unusual for him to be meddling as a 16-year-old middleweight and then still be at that weight all those years later. So something I wanted to throw out there, a little Hagler trivia that, you know, he never acknowledged, he never said that was true, but it's not a conspiracy possibility. It's kind of a real, at least, possibility.
Yeah. Huh. That really does line up. If you just, And then that would make more sense where his body would be like, yeah, I'm good here. I'm good.
Yes.
He stayed retired.
He stayed retired. Yeah. He never came back. If he knew he was 37, you know, and he had the war with Mugabe, and then Leonard, you know, he came back.
Right.
There's no doubt. I thought he won it, but he looked very slow against Leonard. There's no doubt about that. You know, the wear and tear. If he was a 37-year-old guy instead of a 32-year-old guy, the whole thing would make sense. It still could have happened with him being 32, but I never forgot that because it's something that there is a fit to it. You know, there is a fit to it.
And I was young enough just not to be, like, to be ignorant to that stuff. You know what I mean? Like, not reading that or not, you know what I mean? Just young enough to where I didn't give two shits about reading the newspaper at the time. You know what I mean?
And
that really makes sense. And we're not ripping it because it's actually giving him more respect that he did that at that age, potentially.
Right, and it could also possibly explain why he said, look, the retirement's permanent, that's it.
Right, I've seen the writings on the wall. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. Especially with a guy like Leonard in the rematch. Okay, I know what I did wrong. I know what I did right. Okay, you know. Huh. Wow. Interesting. Yeah, very interesting. I, you know. Wow. Yeah, that really does line up, though.
I did tweet. I
maybe
did tweet
he's half
Wally.
Cuban. And we don't know. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Cuban
fighter. Well, that's the thing. I got to admit, I don't like when they always say that about the Cuban guys without evidence. That's why I hate to repeat stuff like that. But I wanted it anchored in that story because that's where I got it from. I mean, I didn't get it from just speculating or some wacky source. You know, this is when the New York Post was writing about boxing every week. It was a front or a back cover story on it, and they had the picture of the birth certificate. But I'll have to go look. I just saw that Wally did answer me back that, but I didn't read it in detail. But that would be on Twitter right now. So, you know, he's Oyster Bay Bomber. So he said he didn't believe it, even though he wrote for the Post. And I respect that because he worked there. I didn't. So, that was out there. Something at least worth thinking about.
You know, I have this boxing Twitter segment. It's kind of the great, good, bad, and ugly type thing. But your tweet a chunk of days ago, commentary said WBC youth world title is a stepping stone to greatness. It's just a perfect boxing Twitter segment on the good side, not on the fanboy side. That I just had to mention that WBC youth world title is a stepping stone for greatness, John.
The commentator said that during the tie card on Friday night. That was the sore rung B-side card. They said it about the I believe that was the fight after sore rung B-side. The commentators actually insulted us with that I quoted. I had to get that out there, that the WBC Youth World title is a stepping stone to greatness. So, John Scully, the Iceman, did comment on that, of course, former pro fighter. So even he was outraged. But he was outraged by that one itself.
That's good. Two fights coming up this weekend on DAZN. Credit to them in some form of a step up, no doubt about it. I wonder what Hooker's going to look like at 47, if he's going to be out of his league, or if, you know, the weight thing, you just never know. He is long, so maybe making this weight is going to be better for him. The last couple of pounds get harder and harder to come off. I don't really know. Virgil Ortiz stepping up, though, against Hooker to an extent regardless. And then Lawrence Okogie going against Glowacki, which I think is a legitimate step up. What do you got to say about these two fights you're on DAZN for the weekend?
I think Virgil Ortiz is going to have a spectacular performance. I like him a lot. He didn't look as sharp as he has been against Sammy Vargas, but that can happen once in a while. I'm not particularly concerned about that. He's one of the best up-and-coming fighters in boxing and in American boxing, both. And the welterweight division is completely loaded, so that's exciting. I think that he will get Hooker out of there. I think that he hits a lot harder than Ramirez, and, you know, Ramirez was able to get Hooker out of there. You know, Hooker... He had picked up a KO here and there when he kind of made that surprise run where he got an alphabet belt at 140. But, you know, decision Flanagan, then he picked up a KO. But he's not a puncher. I mean, if you look at his whole career, he's not a puncher. Once in a while, he looks good when he gets a little leverage. Like you said, he's a tall guy. But he just doesn't have the history as a puncher. He got off a couple of good shots against Ramirez, but I just don't think he's going to be able to do enough to bother Ortiz. And I think Ortiz brings a lot more power than Ramirez. I mean, I like Ramirez too, but not as much as Ortiz. And I just think Ortiz is going to have too much power for Hooker. I don't think he's going to be able to take Ortiz's power. And I think Ortiz should get him out of there pretty easily.
Yeah, I could see some early success just landing, but I'd have to agree with you there. Anything else that you'd like to speak upon at all here, John?
Yeah, just since you mentioned it, Chris, you know, the Okogie and Glowacki fight, I do think that's an interesting fight because Okogie, you know, when I watch him, you know, during the course of his fights, he doesn't look good, but he's big for a cruiserweight, and the power is real. I mean, when that guy unloads, it just comes suddenly in a fight. You know, he doesn't look good, but that power, he sold me on his power. Even though he's fought lesser opposition, this is a big step up for him, like you said. that power is real. I like Glowacki a lot, but he took quite a bit of punishment in that wacky fight with Brides. There was a lot of fouling. I mean, without the fouling, who knows how it would have played out. I don't think it was an unwinnable fight for him, even though he took punishment. But he kind of took punishment in that fight, and I kind of didn't like the way he was really responding in that. But he's a better all-around fighter than Okoli. There's no doubt about that to me, and he throws pretty good combinations. So I guess this is one I'm going to have to – I don't like – it's hard enough to pick winners in fights, so I don't like to get too precise about how it plays out because I just think it's really difficult to even pick who's going to win if you're really picking enough fights, and if it's going to be a KO or a decision is always your bonus. But I think this is going to be one where Glowacki will probably be looking pretty good, probably winning some rounds, but I think with Okoli's size advantage and when he has those power bursts, I don't think Glowacki is going to be able to take it. I don't know exactly when that's going to come, but I'm going to say that comes before the end of 12 at this one, and I think Okoli is going to win by knockout, but he may very well be losing the fight. Matter of fact, I'd almost suspect he's going to be losing the fight, and then he's going to explode and get a knockout.
That's fair. That kind of makes sense. I do think that is a real step up for him, like you mentioned, comparatively to both fighters this weekend. Kind of interesting. We do have, White and Povetkin the following weekend, and hopefully we do have some really good fights on the schedule. Hopefully we can fill up the rest of the schedule for April and May and even into June here soon. Any other items that you want to speak upon at all here, John?
No, Chris. I think we did a good job of covering everything here. Like you said, DAZN will have some good stuff this week and next week. So that is good for that 1 year deal. But I think we've got everything. I think we've got everything covered here.
There we are. I really appreciate it, man. You take it easy and have yourself a good night.
Thanks, Chris. Have a good rest of the night. Great being here as always.
Definitely, man. Good to hear from you. Take it easy.
Okay, take care. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Yes, sir. All righty. And I actually just stumbled upon, I should have let John hear it. Maybe see it on Twitter feed. This is an old Right Guard commercial featuring Marvin Hagler. It's from 1988, so I was a kid at that time, and I specifically remember the Right Guard commercials with him and then the Right Guard commercials with Charles Barkley, for those who know what I'm talking about. They had these rough, rugged dudes talking with a British accent. Here it goes. It's pretty funny.
Otis, good temper. I'm speaking of offending in the personal grooming arena. When seeking maximum protection and a fresh new scent, one should grab new Right Guard Sport Stick from Gillette. Antiperspirant and deodorant. Anything less would be uncivilized.
Uncivilized. And my grandfather, who, like I mentioned, was, that was his guy. That was uncivilized. He would repeat that once we see the commercial. He would repeat it the rest of the day, just joking around. It's uncivilized. Sorry. That's just a little funny little – for those who know what I'm talking about and, like, just remember the commercial, they'll be like, oh, dude, that's right, the Right Guard commercials with him. And then there was one with Barkley, I think, on a horse, and they were playing, like, what the hell's that, polo? The hell's that? Is that horse polo? That doesn't sound right, but it describes it. McCaskill, handled business. I thought she won it more cleanly this time. I'd like to see her in Persone next or someone in that realm, but I thought she looked really good. I was also surprised, like I mentioned, against Gauthier, that freaking counter right hand, because there was back and forth in that second round. Nasty counter right hand and a flurry for the TKO. Was it early? It didn't seem like there was a ton of protest from Clark's corner or him. you know, Isak, Isaac Cruz, I really do think that he's going to get something out of that fight. Like I mentioned, I like how he was like, screw it. I'm going to go to the body with my free hand and just make you hurt. I'm going to hurt you type thing. And I was impressed with that. I think it was like a body shot combination left to the right, left and right from Brandon Lee that knocked him down. And then in an exchange, nasty-ass right hand landed flush. Out cold was Samuel Tia. And it was funny because Farhood, and I respect the shit out of Farhood, but it was funny. He's like, you know, maybe this is just the way it was going to happen. He's going to weather the storm and then walloped, just got walloped. What else? Missial Lopez and Jordan White. That was kind of a fun fight. I thought White took care of business, kind of buzzed him maybe once or twice through the first couple of rounds. Then I thought Lopez won the fourth and fifth. He started bringing the pressure, started landing harder in the exchanges, like I've mentioned. Just better lands in general. It looked like in the sixth round, White missed a jab. Lopez was clowning him, talking about, oh, you're going to throw some jabs. He was just messing around. Next thing you know, an uppercut, I think with the left hand, wobbled Lopez. And I think it was like a right hand on the second knockdown. And Lopez was even, I mean, he was hurt. He was really hurt. But he was like, his legs were gone. But he was still kind of talking trash after the first knockdown. It was just kind of a weird, he's like, I don't know. He was all wobbled and couldn't walk properly, and then, but he still was kind of looking at him like, dude, this is nothing, you know. It was kind of weird. He was clowning, but then he got knocked out. But he was very, he was in bad shape, in my opinion. Maybe some people saw that differently. And then Tomas Velasquez and Victor, what was it, Padilla, I believe it was. Both undefeated fighters, you know, definitely a showbox type thing. Velasquez looked really good early on. Left hook to the body or the elbow, or it was a slip. It was really funky how that went down. I was like, what's going on? I'm missing something here. And then, like, a good jab, kind of a quick jab, right hand Velasquez was landing, and it seemed like Padilla took over from there, the short left hooks, combinations. In this roundhouse right that landed really hard. I think it was like he started out with several left hands, then like a roundhouse right, and a flurry knocked him down, then another flurry, TKO, so a good win there. Fun little showbox card. I got to give him credit. I thought it was a good card. I do dig the midweek stuff, and this might be just a thing because they do have Bellator now on Showtime, so maybe this will be an ongoing Wednesday show, which is cool to me. I like Toe-to-Toe Tuesdays. Obviously, you know, back in the day, Tuesday night fights and whatnot, so, and even Friday night fights in the spring and summer would also have a Wednesday night fights for those who are watching that, mostly hardcore fight fans, of course, but they do a Wednesday and Thursday. Would kick in sometime in the spring and go all the way through the summer. I remember when they stopped that Wednesday, I think they put baseball in its place. Can't blame them there. But we were all kind of like, well, maybe they'll combine budgets and they'll make it. No, that didn't happen, unfortunately. Not to rip on ESPN Friday Night Fights, because for a while it was damn solid when it began, and it had a good run, but it just kind of fell off down the stretch. It's tough to make a fight every single week from January to September, you know, especially when you don't have a deal with anyone, and a lot of people aren't trying to get their guy beat, and it just, like I said, week to week is tough, you know what I mean, no doubt about it. I do think, like I mentioned, that Hooker will have some success with the jab, with the length. I think he'll land some nice punches early, but at some point Ortiz is going to adjust. He's not going to go in there full steam ahead trying to murder him too early. I do think he'll use his skill and then start to open up, and I do think he'll knock him out, no doubt about it. But I think it'll be some give and take. So I'm looking forward to see Virgil Ortiz. It's Virgil Ortiz Jr., right? He's going by. And I thought John called it with the Coley. I think that it'll be random. That jab's good, but it takes him a little while to warm up. That Chamberlain fight was really slow. Not much happened there, but he's long, he's lanky, and he can punch down at Globoski, who I've always liked as just a fun, come-forward, spirited fighter. I remember that Cunningham fight. That was just awesome. Cunningham was just, you know, beating him up to an extent, and then he'd get dropped, and Cunningham would get back up. And it was a fun fight. That was a fun fight, no doubt about it. So, yeah, I'm picking Ortiz. I don't know. It kind of matters how quick he wants to turn on the gas. Could be fourth round. Could be eighth round. I don't really know. Kind of matters what gear he's in early. And then will Glavosky get knocked out? I'm going to say he's just going to get strung along and get beat up. But if it's a knockout, it'd be TKO. I don't think he'll ice him. But that would be a nice statement for a Coley. I think it's a good fight, man. Didn't Glavosky get COVID? And that's why he couldn't this fight got pushed back. I believe it was one of those that got pushed back. We had that string where, like, Ubali, Indonaire, White, Povetkin, because Povetkin got it. We had this string of cancellations. Let's hope, knock on wood, you can hear that we don't have too many more of those. And shit is opening up. You know, Florida and Texas, you know, you can sit there and rip them. Because, you know, you shouldn't have a stadium probably with 100,000 people in it. But just keep the fucking masks, though. That's the thing that gets me. Open up, cool. Open up, cool. All right. Open up. But, you know, don't take away the mask, in my opinion. And I work amongst the public. So that kind of bothers me a little bit. But I was also in protest this summer with a bunch of people. We had masks on, and shit did pop off. New York City in June would have been on fire. Instead, numbers were dropping. So the mask in groups helps. No matter what your theory is on this shit, it's proven. Like I said, go think of New York City. You know, you had Philly, New York City, Minneapolis, L.A. I mean, everyone had protests, but those cities were really popping, like, throughout the summer. And, you know, just wear the damn mask. But even here, we're opening up more here in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, you know, St. Paul, whatever, the Twin Cities of, of Minnesota. No, but we're opening up. I'm assuming the Minneapolis Armory should be back in business here in a couple of months. The Twins are going to allow 10,000 spaced out folks. Schools are pretty much back. They're thinking about going to 3 feet instead of 6 feet. Actually, did they already do that? I can't remember. But I think it's up to 2,000 people you can have on indoor arenas. The Wolves are going to start having some folks at the Target Center, as the Minnesota Wild, at the XL Energy Center. And like I said, I'm more focused in on the Armory, but I'm pretty sure you can have up to 2,000 or 3,000. It's still a capacity thing. And the Armory is going to look a little funky, all spaced out, because a lot of that is standing room only. But they do have two layers of balconies that they can use. So just even if they could get 1,500 in there spaced out, 2,000, that would be dope. So I'm thinking that'll be the case. I know a lot of folks think that Fox and PBC are going to come to an end here soon, like they're basically done. But I've seen three separate people doing camera work, not camera like I'm holding the camera, but in front of the camera, hyping fights that are coming. So I don't believe that is the case, but who knows? Who knows? You never know. A lot of people thought Showtime was done. Some people still do. In fact, I'm going to address that DM. That's what it was about, me and Woods. Me and Wood were talking last week, and he mentioned the Showtime ratings, which are worth mentioning. Me and him have had that conversation off air, so that's kind of why we went right to it. I didn't sit there and shut him down or anything like that. We just had that conversation, so I was just making a point. I wasn't deflecting or anything. A lot of folks, or not a lot of folks, but I got two messages specifically about that, so I will address that. I will address that. But anyway, as far as news goes, like I said, Tyson Fury spoke out and was like, hey, dude, if I don't have a bunch of money in my account, you know, and I don't know where we're fighting, this fight's not on until that happens. So don't rule out Wilder. Anything can happen. I'm drinking beer. I'm not even working out. Now, I don't really know what the hell he's doing when it comes to that. This is Tyson Fury. Let's not act like we know what he's doing. But, you know, he did say some stuff. It was like, okay, kind of funny. And then not long after, bam, Eddie's talking about the shit's done, two-fight deal, the thing's sealed and dealed. We just need a venue, and we're still trying to figure out the money. You know, so it's kind of – speaking of RIP to Fred Hurd Sr., the father of Jared Hurd, unfortunately passed at the age of 63. Rest in peace. That is not – and also John Molina Sr., rest in peace to him as well. You hate to see folks pass, you know. I mean, it's part of life, of course, but that's too bad, man. That's too bad. This is actually, where is Fury? I had this Fury line where he was saying, like, it could be Wilder, dude. Who freaking knows? I mean, I'm not going to rule out anything. And, where the hell is it? Anyway, he said, don't write off Wilder off on the occasion. Wilder may be next. I will never fight in the UK again. I'm fighting in the capital of boxing, basically. And Tyson Fury also says on Anthony Joshua, there's a lot, this is from IFL TV, there's a lot going on behind the scenes that can scoop her a fight. Nothing's actually on until you're in the ring. We're nowhere near that at the moment. Do I think the fight will eventually happen? Yes, I do. But nothing's imminent. And it's kind of funny because flashback, I mean, we can go to July that the two-fight deal was done, right? But we'll just go to December. Coppinger, Eddie Hearn says Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua is verbally agreed to the contracts and are being verbally agreed to and contracts are being drafted. So they were drafted December 19th and it's now March 16th. That's a lot of stuff. Fight, you know, for a championship fight, May, June. Hearn says only minor issues to resolve, such as who walks last, the site, etc. The fight's going to happen next. That's what he said. Now, once the report came out and all this stuff about, well, hold on, Coppinger kind of backed up and said, this lines up with everything I've heard. I do think it'll happen, but I'm not confident it's next, after he actually quoted the IFLT quotes that I just wrote. We're talking about. So, and like I said, Eddie Hearn had plenty to say. By the way, 10 minutes left of the live stream, 646-381-4990. That's 646-381-4990. If you're in the browser now, in about 9 minutes and 53, 52, 51, 50 seconds, you're going to have to call the number to listen to the rest of the show. It's basically fight news and boxing Twitter stuff. Unless anybody wants to press one and join in, or if anybody jumps in the last 10 minutes. So he said it's a done deal and all that, but Eddie Hearn said that, but it's like, if you don't have the site feed, then it's, you can sit there and say 55-50 or 50-50, I mean, or 55-45 or 52.3, to, you know, that type of thing. But if they've agreed on that, that is dope. That is something you got to get out of the way. But you need the site feed. But also, then you heard stuff coming from Eddie, like, here's a quote, because everybody has got a piece of that Tyson Fury pie on Anthony Joshua's side. There's just Anthony and 258, which is his management company, and us, Matchroom. So we're simple. for those guys, okay, it's Top Rank, it's Queensberry, or maybe that, it's Tyson Fury, and they're all over the world. I don't know whether there's some internal sorting of their pieces of the pie, but that's not our business. What we're saying is we're ready. That's not our business, but I'm going to say some shit about it, you know? So he was kind of lending itself to, yeah, man, I mean, we're ready over here. I don't know what's going on over there, but when push comes to shove, you know, let's just be honest. I mean, even Coppinger, Eddie's go-to guy, he just came out with an article, what, yesterday? Mike Coppinger in The Athletic. Here's the headline. Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua fight far from finalized. 100 million plus site fee still sought, and that's from the Middle East, he says. You know, there's 13 or 9 or all these different site fees all, you know, all over the country. And he kept saying that, saying that, saying that. He's been saying it since, like, July. So it's kind of like, all right, dude, cool to announce stuff. You want to keep the buzz going. But in the same breath, like I said earlier, I was just watching ESPN. And Jalen and Jacoby, Jalen's like, what is that date? I need to know the date. I gotta be there. It's like, well, it's gonna be in Saudi Arabia probably, because if they do have even 60 million, 80 million, 100 million or more, they're gonna do the fight there. You can't blame them. But yeah, it's funny because, you know, both parties finding an acceptable venue and location. Well, that's everything. That's everything. He talked about how the kingdom there in Saudi Arabia, they're the front runners because, you know, they doiled out approximately 60 mil for that rematch between Joshua and Ruiz. And they're saying those involved, you know, whatever the amount is, it's a ton of money. And I don't see the MGM. I don't see anybody putting up even 60 million for the fight, to be honest. I don't think the MGM, the Cowboy Stadium, I don't think any would put up that kind of money for it. So why wouldn't you do that? Now, Formula E races were held in Saudi Arabia in late February. No fans were permitted. Extreme E races are slated for the first week of April. No fans are permitted. I guess Saudi's not ready to do it without fans. Saudi Arabia still wants to fight even with restrictions on the fans per sources, but that would surely mean a significantly smaller fee. I don't know how much money you're making off that 15,000 stadium. Maybe this is going to be bigger and they have a larger stadium that they put in. I just don't know. Maybe it wouldn't be that, you know, the one that they fought in there before, but that couldn't have came up with like 30 or 40 million at the gate for that one. You know what I mean? So, I don't know, man. A lot of this stuff, and Bob, this is from Dan Redfield on BoxingScene.com. Arum to angry fans demanding Fury and Joshua deal. Go fuck yourself. Find the life. Oh, Bobby, you got to love it. I think everybody is proceeding the way they should be. We're waiting for it. It's a mother effing pandemic. You can look at it this way, that way, but it's a damn pandemic. He's freaking out. Fury saying he's not training anymore, blah, 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 blah. I don't know what to believe when it comes to that. We're now Max Kellerman, I believe. I didn't hear the audio just yet, but I had heard numerous people saying that his source, Kellerman, ESPN, are saying that, you know, that Wilder's going to get a step-aside money. That obviously has been the issue for the whole time, too, no matter if you want to believe that or not. You know, it is what it is. There's not much you can do when it's this type of fight. You know, he says the big money other than the gate will come from the UK pay-per-view, and you want to get as close as prime time as possible. So, you know what I say? Go fuck yourselves. Find a life, for Christ's sakes. We're all dealing with the fraud situation, blah, 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 blah. So who knows when the fight's going to happen. It sounds like both men want it. That's important, right? Oh, speaking of the Hagler, I just got a couple of messages on this, and I didn't realize this. What I was trying to say is people are grabbing the Hagler thing for the coronavirus thing with the vaccine stuff, and also just finding a way to shit on boxing, right? And that's cool. There's plenty to shit on. But, and it was different in the 70s and 80s. There's no doubt about it. But to use Hagler with it over a death is bullshit, one. Two, Hagler was the one getting fucked back then. So when we say, oh, this would never happen to, oh, but this, that, and the third. No, actually, dude, he was 46-2-1 before his first title shot in 1979. Now, sure, if you take a close loss, you have a draw that most people didn't think it was a draw, whatever the case is, he had to work his way out. He had to cry. He had to winky write his ass up, right? But, you know, to think that, oh, boxing was so much better, well, why the hell did it take, you know, 49 fights to get a damn title fight then? You know, there was some issues there. So I just think it's funny to sit there and, you know, can't we just shit on boxing so many other ways than bringing my whole point is, you know, you could say they don't make them like Hagler anymore. Cool. We could say that about our whole society. I mean, there's a lot to say, but, you know, I just, it's like, dude, can't we just respect Hagler and not have to bring in your personal shit to this? It's just disrespectful. But it just, and it's also just, like I mentioned, a bad example. Because you're talking about a guy that took so long, took to like 1983, I think. Was that 83, that Duran fight? Maybe I'm wrong on that. Something like that. I mean, for him to pop off, just to get a title fight, it took a long time. So, you know, he got screwed, but that's why people loved him, because he was the people's champ, and he's just a grinder and all that, and he made his way up to where he was the most popular guy when Sugar Ray Leonard was out. So, I don't know. Some of it is just like, wow, dude, like, do we really got to do this? Do we really got to, why can't we just talk about Marvin Hagler? Why do we have to bring in, you know, information we don't even know is true yet? We don't really know much about his death. You know what I mean? But that's just nowadays, I mean, people have been doing it for years, but we just have social media. So that plays into it. We were talking about DAZN ratings earlier, and I got two messages in my DMs. It went down in my DMs. And somebody said that I wouldn't even let Wood speak on it, and I said, you know, all the ratings are down, and it's true. All sports, TV and most of the TV and sports are down. You know, news is up. Subbing to stuff with a lot of content is up. But remember, they didn't have content, really. Any new content. They had, I'm talking about DAZN. They had old fights and everything like that. But it's like, and they were screwing people, too, that were trying to, it matters where you were. Like, through Roku, I could put it on pause. But other people couldn't pause their stuff, you know. So it was a little funky, but either way, I guess my point was, well, Showtime since the end, now, in 2015 and 2019, Showtime was piss poor. There's just no way around it. And guess what? This podcast was here saying that, okay? But when they start putting out good fights, I'm not going to sit there and just listen to Eddie Hearn and Bob Arum and say it's going out of business. Now, could it go out of business? Hell yeah. It definitely could. But to say the ratings, and I'm not talking about Wood, I'm saying in general, this is my whole point, to say the ratings are bad, so therefore it's going out of business, well, they announced a solid schedule in my mind in July for last year, right? And then, you know, I really liked that 122 card. This was a decent card here that we saw, and the next card is really good. Step up fights for both guys next month. They do a Showtime championship, quote-unquote championship boxing, once a month, so there's only 12 through the PBC or whatever. And then they do pick up fights here and there and then a bunch of show boxes. So they've put out a decent to very good product so far. So my point is, Well, we never hear about what the subs are and the quote-unquote ratings are for DAZN. And if we'd hear about some of them, then people would probably dump on it more. And maybe they'd, you know, say a bunch of stuff. But the last two Canelo fights, they did not announce what the subs were. Now, does that mean it's going out of business? That was my point to anybody that says, well, Showtime's going out of business because of the ratings. What and I have actually had a conversation about that offline. We've already discussed our thoughts on it. And I was just saying, well, I wasn't ignoring what he said or getting into an argument or ripping him. He didn't take it that way. I don't believe maybe he did. I don't think so because, like I said, we've already had that conversation. But to just base it off ratings and that's it is like, well, I mean, they as a company did really well. If you look at some of the that new Paramount Plus that has something to do with Viacom CBS, as we know, Showtime, they mentioned, you know, in their little Paramount press release that had a bunch of different layers of executives and whatnot and people, you know, in control of this department and that department. They're selling the fucking thing, right? And I talked about this a couple months ago. You know, they mentioned boxing on there a few times. If they're about to go out of business, why would they even do that? Now, they still could go out of business. But I'm just saying, you know, you know, I don't think Fox is not going to carry another fight. I'll say that. And I'm pretty confident about that because I'm seeing multiple people filming shit, like getting filmed, breaking down a fight, whether it's Ariel or Ruiz. I don't know all the fights. You know, I know a couple of them. I don't know the schedule. And I don't know when it's coming out. I have no clue. I don't know if they're going to do a rollout, Fox and FS1, like we mentioned. Will they double up on FS1s? I don't know. I don't know, but I like to take it all in instead of just listening to one article or just listen to Glacier or a Tweety Bird. That's all. That's all we've ever done because the continuation of burying the PBC just keeps happening and happening and happening. And I get it. We're waiting for Fox or FS1. We're waiting for an FS1 card to get scheduled this year. It hasn't been scheduled. We're waiting for a quality Fox card. Haven't had that. So, you know, I get that part. But I'm not just going to go, this means they're dead. It's over. Just line it up. You know, I just won't do it because even though it could be, that could be the ultimate thing. I've never said that. I mean, the first time while I was reading it about the Glacier thing, someone sent me the Woodsy article, and I read a chunk of it on air, and I went right to, well, maybe – since it's actually a contract year for Showtime, maybe they're saying, hey, Al, we'll step up more cards on Showtime. Maybe CBS Sports gets involved. But also, we'll put it on what was it, All Access, CBS All Access. I think that is what it was. We'll put it on that. We'll live stream some stuff too. And some of it will be available there or whatever. And maybe that'll be part of it. I don't know. I just throw stuff on the wall, and you try to make sense of it all. And it's been what we do here. And I say we because the callers are the hosts, and I've had a multiple different hosts over the years. But that's what we've always done. So why, you know, we only – the first probably 4 years of the show, we never really mentioned this stuff. But when you see the media – you know, taken aside, then it's worth talking about. That's all. Because it's on some bullshit. That's all. We'll see, though. We'll see. Like I said, I don't know. I don't know what's up with the FS1 cards. That's a great question. What I do know is they could run 2 in 1 month, and that would make up for the 3 they haven't done so far. So I really don't know. Anyway, let's stop. Let's stop about that shit. Pretty much... yeah, and when someone just messaged me too. When I'm talking about Showtime's up on the year, they are up on the year or from last year on they're up as far as subs. I don't believe they've ever had, did I read 27 million? I think it's 20 million straight up linear and then 7 on the standalone. Is that what I believe it was? I don't think they've been at 27 million, or it hasn't been in a long time when they had like a couple hit shows at once or whatever, like real deal hit. But anyway, that's what I meant by that. I'm not saying their ratings are up, but like I said, look around. If it wasn't for those lead-ins, look at the summer. Look at the June, July, August. Look at June and July. Look at the ratings. They weren't great on ESPN either. They were way down. A lot of ratings are way down. So, why wouldn't it be down then? So our big sports are down. Why in the world wouldn't boxing be down? Unless they pump up something or, like I said, a lead-in. But even the lead-in, I think it was Virginia and Duke, the lead-in was down like a million at least from the year before, that type of game. So that hurt the boxing card. That should have been 1.5, close to 2 million peak easy. Maybe I shouldn't say easy, but, fairly easy. But it wasn't. It is what it is. You know what I mean? So now we're going to go into fight news. Oh, here's another thing. Marvelous Marvin Hagler hands the baton to the modern-day Four Kings. There were mixed emotions felt on Saturday evening as we said goodbye to the very best. They're trying to say these super flyweights now are that. Even though before it was the other way. It was let's crown the 135 pounders. But now they actually all fight each other. So they're all, the flyweight wars were awesome. But picking out those, Quadros isn't Durant. Estrada's not Leonard. Chocolatito's not Hagler. And what is it? Roman is the ones they threw in there, I think. I don't think he's Tommy Hearns. It's okay to say that. It's okay to say that, man. Kevin Cunningham, trainer, put out a tweet. Sugar Ray Leonard fought Benavidez, Duran, Hearns. Hagler fought Duran, Hearns. Cut off here. Sent this, but it's cut off to me. Basically, he was basically saying, hey, they fought more. And someone followed up by saying Ray Benavidez, Duran, Hearns fought each other 7 times from 1979 to 84. The Hagler overlap started in 83. It was 83 with Duran. Between the five, there were 12 fights from 79 to 89. That's just awesome. You know what I mean? And even though everybody wanted to see everybody wanted to see Hagler and Leonard, ultimately that's what everybody wanted to see. I never heard one time, I don't care about that middleweight division. I only want to see that one fight. And that's what we see now on boxing Twitter. So it's kind of Breadman Boxing had a tweet that I've been talking about for quite a while. I have to agree. When it comes to judging, the paper bag, the Pulp Fiction briefcase with the light when it pops up like that, that's not really what it is. This is what he said. One last thing. I don't know if this was corruption or incompetence, but here's how corruption works. No one gives a judge an envelope with money. The judges know who the money is behind, of course. So they simply favor the money guy, so they keep being assigned fights, which makes them more money, and it's the prestige. It's dope to get that type of seat in all these big ones, and it's like how you have a house fighter. You just have a house judge, and you can't use them all the time, but sometimes certain matchups, you're going to have to use them, and that's really what it comes down to. I just don't really believe in the – I mean, they all get to eat out and shit like that. And when, we've seen dinners – it's all the judges, though. And it's not always that you get dinners. I mean, I'm sure you get stipends and travel and all that. But it's the prestige of going to these fights. It's just being a company guy to the max. And that's how you do it. So it's going to be a combination of – fight news and boxing Twitter, and then we'll get out of here unless anyone presses one. Castaño, he said, I'd fight Charlo, Lara, Hurd, Harrison, whoever the PBC gets me. And he also said, we definitely want the fight. We're talking about Charlo. We have been told by Al Heyman that Charlo wants the fight as well. As far as the, as we know, all sanctioning bodies are on board. The only issue might be the IBF. I know they're saying a mandatory was waiting for his title, so we'll see. But hopefully, even the IBF has done some work there as far as, you know, being able to kind of sneak in and be like, hey, can we just allow this? Because it is a legit unification. It's not a double WBA unification or nothing like that. This comes from Clarissa Shields. We're all feeling this once in a while on Twitter, or not even once in a while. Twitter is the most annoying app in the world to me. When I get to 1 million on Instagram, I'll be deleting this app because y'all be on here tweeting like you know how to fight and you don't. And although boxing Twitter can, you know, be, I've met a lot of cool people through boxing Twitter. That would be stupid for me to say I had. But, man, almighty, sometimes it just, it's rough. This is Rung Basai. So Rung Basai, he says, I did three mandatories against Estrada and Chocolatito in 2 years when I was the champ. Estrada has been the champ for 2 years, and he did zero mandos. I've been waiting for a long time. I did everything I had to do. They got the unification they want. Now it's my time. I can't really say anything about that, dude. I mean, you know, I don't get me wrong. I want to see the trilogy. But it's not going to mean less to me if it has one less belt. I'll say that right now. Or no belt whatsoever. I could give a shit about it. I'd rather see the fight and then the winner get Rung Basai. Rung Basai probably take on Quadros, I think, is the rankings. I'm not sure about that, but I think so. Good fight, whatever. David Hay, this is from Sky Sports Boxing. If Tyson Fury attacks Anthony Joshua in the same manner he did Wilder, I don't believe it works. He'll be too open, too wide, and someone as fast and athletic and as skillful as AJ will be able to punch right through the middle and take him out early. Let's back it up. I do kind of agree, like, unless you shorten the distance all the way and you have him on the rope or you're leaning with that big body on him, and roughing his ass up with the clothesline left hooks and all that, and hitting them with your wrist. No, I'm just kidding. You know what I'm saying? I think that would, but we've seen Joshua. I wanted to back it up because the athletic part. He's stiff, dude. You ever seen him dunk? He's not really that athletic for him. He has fast hands. He's skillful. Offensively, he's skillful. But that athletic thing, I don't see that. Of course, he's an athlete. He gets paid to be. But when you say athletic, or at least here in the States, when you say athletic, it means you can just do a bunch of different shit. You're just a natural athlete. And I've seen him try to dunk a ball, dude. It was, you know. I mean, not even dunking a ball. I mean, he's 6'5", so he should be able to dunk a ball. But not even that. It's how he jumped. Look at his ass. It's just like, yeah, that's not athletic. But I do agree, the whole attack manner, it has to be all the way in. But in my sense, I think Fury should stay on the outside for the most fight. Most of this is Rolled Boxing. I see way – oh, this was before the fight. I see, and I agree with it. I see way more people talking about how people saying they don't care about Chocolatito and Gallo 2 than I see people saying that, actually. I either pick followers better or the pro little guy crew ain't taking the win. Believe, even most who say they ain't watching are watching, just lying to kick it. My point is, a lot of people, and the point of this tweet was, you know, a lot of people were like, I'm going to watch something else. And people can watch whatever the fuck they want. Just like pay-per-view, if you think it's value, that's cool. But don't give me some shit card and say it's value because you're a fanboy of the fighter and then shit on, like, the Charlo card. That's where I draw the line. But you saw a lot of people just going, man, as if their whole timeline was people dumping on the fight. I'm not watching this shit, you know. And that just, it wasn't the case on mine, I'll tell you that. I can tell you that. So Rung Basai getting the winner of Estrada. This is Jake Donovan. and Chocolatito will result in a trilogy no matter the outcome. That fight will make 11 fight total between Rungvisai Estrada, Chocolatito, and Carlos Quadros, compared to zero between the alleged Four Kings, Teofimo, Hank, and Ryan Garcia. Now, Haney and Ryan Garcia, but obviously they got time to get that out. But that is the funny part about, hey, let's do this, man. Like, let's clown them before they even fought. Now, none of them are fighting this time around. Okay, sources. This is Deuce. Sources who Deuce would, hey, Ranger Rollins. I keep wanting to say Ranger Rick. Deucey was out there causing problems. You know, a lot of people, Coppinger in among others, jump on him. Fans with sources and all that. But then all of a sudden, was it Marcos? Who was it? Is it Marcos? Anyway, oh boy, I think it was him. He's like, who's out here tweeting this? We got a leak, basically. And they're getting mad at him. But then people were dissing him. So it's like, who's leaking this shit? But it's just fans with sources. It's kind of funny. Anyway, this is what they were talking about. And he actually leaked it by saying it. I followed that up. Like, well, aren't you actually leaking the information if you're asking who's tweeting that out? Sources. Jose Cito Lopez is the current front runner to be Terrence Bud Crawford's next opponent. That bout was previously mooted last year prior to the top rank tabbing Kell Brook for the duties. They're pegging it for May. Everything's happening in May. I wonder how many will actually happen. And really quick, Sean Porter, he said, I'll be ready in May, Crawford. And he put the Porter, hashtag Porter way smart. But he also put, you know, at Terrence Crawford and at TR. And Crawford responding with a yawn. Three yawn emojis. Just stay on standby because now you're trying me. Stay on standby? Was the Proud Boys? Anyway, he said, hey, the closed mouth don't get fed. And I can't read the rest of the tweet, but that was kind of funny. I kind of like that. Got a couple more, and then we'll shut this puppy on down. Oh, here we go. This is a quote from Benavidez with the Fox PBC stuff. He said, I feel like Canelo the best fight. I feel like I give Canelo the best fight out of anyone, and I feel like his team knows that. There's a reason why they're kind of avoiding me. And Eddie Reynosa comes back, says, we do not avoid anyone. Two times losing the title belt below the ring answers your concerns, champ. Regards. And that's what I've been saying, Doug. You can't complain too much because you're the one who lost your belts. Why do some boxing fans care about the business? To dispute the false narratives that persisted for years, especially around Al Haymon. Al was destroying boxing by overpaying fighters, yet Hearn is the greatest promoter in the sport for spending $10 million and only getting $700K at the gate. That is a good point. We didn't, you know, he was overpaying. I remember Danny Garcia, Thurman both making a mill up front anyway, the guarantee. We know they probably made more. I think that did over a $2 million gate. And media members were just, not all, but a good chunk of them, just how in the hell? This is just, oh my God, $1 million both? Now you're seeing, you know, $5 and $10 million getting thrown around. It's just funny. It's just funny. It's from Raging Babe. If I'm Fury, I'd fight Wilder next. Perfect warm-up and stay busy fight before Anthony Joshua. I say that respectfully. The fight with Joshua is a mega fight. Neither should go in the fight cold. And I agree, he should fight Wilder. But I wouldn't say it's a perfect warm-up, stay busy fight. I think that's pretty ridiculous considering what's happened. And I picked him the second time around. Don't get me wrong. Disclosing details of what happens in sparring session is among the lamest things you could do in boxing. Tom from Sunday Puncher said, to be clear, Teofimo, father and son both love to brag about sparring and naming names. In my opinion, they waived their right to privacy on the topic a long time ago. I totally agree. Raging Baydash, a lot of people jumped in on this one. Why are fighters and trainers talking so much about sparring? What happens in the gym should stay there. This era is so corny. And I agree. I do got to say, though, it's corny to name fighters at 135 that have fought each other and name them. Try to find a new nickname, like many tweeted, to call them this. Let's name them, dude. They're going to stay boxing and them are fighting each other yet. This is kind of interesting, but true, or whatever, kind of a good point. Was good when Eddie Hearn pretended to cry about IRP, Patrick Day, and saying more needs to be done to make the sport safer. 6 weeks later, he puts about five drug cheats on the AJ Ruiz card. He's had his fair share of drug cheats. God, why can't I say that together? Okay, this is a straight fanboy scenario here on Boxing Twitter. Andrade even asked for PBC to make the offer for Charlo. Crickets. Charlo didn't want whatever million. It says seven, but we know it's actually under seven. Whatever. On Andre, you know, to fight Andre on his own. Then Andre tells the public for the PBC to send him an offer to cross over to fight Jermell Charlo, Heyman Charlo, Crickets. And it's like, actually, Andre on the Chris Mannix show out of nowhere said, actually, I had an offer. We've gone over this. We've been over this in the spring. And I caught Mannix trying to say, no, dude, I talked to him about this, dude. No, you didn't, Mannix. He brought it up. And that just shows you you're not doing your due diligence. Some of these media members that we talked about, we're talking about Mannix right now. But he could have reached out to Espinoza and asked, hey, did you legitimately, you know, ask Andre to fight Charlo, or not ask, but, you know, give him a deal? And Andre is the one that said, not only did they offer me a fight, they offered me two deals. One, just a one and done, which he, if he's so confident, he could have beat Charlo, and then went and got the bigger money, right? And mind you, this was his record money at the time, highest first. And they also said it could have been a one and done. Or they offered him a multi-fight deal, and he turned it down. Now, that's his prerogative. He was getting more money over there. I get it. But who has he fought now over there? People are trying to hype this fight coming up. I'm not. So that's just some fanboy stuff. Anyway, I'm going to go ahead and – actually, let me just breeze by something really quick to see if anything – doesn't look like anything has taken place. Breaking. Okay, I'm going to get out of here. Enjoy the fights this weekend. We'll be back pretty much at the normal time. Hope everybody has a pretty damn good week. See you soon. Peace. Enjoy the fights, like I said.
Once you become the world champion, I believe that you feel you have the upper hand. So now, as you fight, let's say you fight 4 or 5 years of straight survival, the bullshit, the whole bag, and when you become the world champion, you're like, you know what, that made it. That will show you it's this. So I'm going to get every dollar worth. What I deserve.